All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HDI2 Proposed Rule Task Force for Group 2 meeting. I'm Seth Pazinski. I'll be serving as your designated federal officer for today. As a reminder, all of our meetings are open to the public and public feedback is welcome throughout using the Zoom chat feature. We will also have time scheduled at the end of our agenda for verbal public comments as well. And so we're going to get started with a roll call. So when I call your name, if you can please indicate that you are present. Mark Sendak.
Present.
Suresh Ballou. Hans Butendijk.
Good morning.
Good morning. Steve Eichner. Raj Gudvarti. Mary Beth Carrillo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hung Liu.
Good morning.
Good morning. Meg Marshall.
Good morning.
Good morning. Alex Muggy.
Good morning.
Good morning. Shantanu Nundi. Dan Riskin.
Good morning.
Good morning. Phil Sutherland. I did get a message. Oh, I'm sorry. I see that Cheryl Turney will not be able to join today. Naresh Sundar Rajan.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. Is there anyone I missed or anyone who just joined us? Okay. Then I'm going to turn it over, Mark, to you to get into our agenda.
So, thank you, everybody. Today is, I think, our last meeting. So, starting next week, we're going to be meeting with the other subgroups to go through everything. And then we're going to present to High Tech on the 12th. So really appreciate the time everyone's put into this, and especially appreciate ONC's help shepherding us through the process. So happy to jump into the presentation from ONC, which is going to be next slide is going to be reorienting around the charge. So we're making recommendations to the HDI2 proposed rule. This subgroup is focused on certification criteria. Next slide, please. Today, we're just going to go through a few of the last criteria, and then we're going to spend most of the discussion time just wrapping up loose ends from earlier criteria, making sure that we draft language for the proposed recommendations for everything that we want to make sure to push forward to High Tech. So next slide. Happy to hand it off to the ONC staff now.
Vishal, you're on mute.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, great. Hello, everybody. Thanks, Mark, and the rest of the committee for taking the time, investing the time, and providing us with input on various aspects of our rule. And I'm here specifically to discuss the insights condition, which I guess is the last amongst the items that you've kind of gone through. So we can just jump to the next slide, I believe. I think you guys are all probably pretty familiar with this disclaimer and public comment guidance, which is, you know, the information that I'm sharing today essentially is not the final kind of word on this, and that, you know, you all should be also looking at the, I'll be discussing the final rule, HTI1 insights, as well as, you know, what was in the proposed rulemaking for HTI2. So those documents are the final kind of word on this, but next slide, please. All right, so next slide. Okay, so in terms of the brief overview, I'm just going to provide a brief overview of the insights condition. I'm sure not everybody is familiar with it. So I just wanted to share a brief overview of the insights condition before going into what we've proposed related to that in HTI 1. As I just mentioned, the insights condition was finalized in HTI 1, and we're proposing to make some modifications to it in HTI 2. There are three areas in which we're making those modifications. One that relates to the reporting process. Two that relates to the minimum reporting qualifications for developers. And then the third area just relates to updates to measures that we had finalized in HTI 1. So next slide, please. Next slide. All right, so HTI 1. So the insights condition was developed because in the Cures Act, it called for the establishment of an electronic health record reporting program that would provide transparent reporting to measure the performance of certified health IT in a variety of domains, one of which, you know, included interoperability, but went beyond that to usability, privacy and security, as well as other areas, usability. The legislation specified that the implementation of it should be within the condition and maintenance of certification for developers of certified health IT. And we kind of dubbed or, you know, renamed the electronic health record reporting program to the insights condition because we wanted to avoid confusion with, you know, other past kind of programs that were similarly named, and also because it reflects the goals that ONC sees in the program, which is to glean insights on health IT, you know, how it's working, how it's addressing, you know, we're hoping that the reporting program, the insights condition, will address information gaps in the health IT marketplace, provide insights on the use of specific certified health IT functionalities that we have measures on, and also provide information about consumers' experiences with certified health IT. Next slide. So in HTI 1, we finalized the insights condition and operationalized, you know, our directive from the Cures Act to develop measures that really focus on interoperability, but across a variety of areas. These areas include individual access, clinical care information exchange, looking at standards adoption and conformance, and public health information exchange. So those four kind of areas or domains. And we developed measures in each one of those areas. And each of the measures have specific certification criteria that are associated with the measure as it's part of the certification program. And within each of these measures, there are specific metrics to operationalize the measures. And those metrics are described in the measure. We have measure specification sheets that go into the details of the metrics, the definitions, any implementation guidance, and that's on ONC's website. And I won't spend too much time in the weeds going into that, but I did want to provide just like a brief overview of what is the insights conditions, highlight some of these measures, you know, the measures for clinical care exchange really focus on the CCDA problems, medications, allergies, reconciliation, incorporation, looking at the exchange, document-based exchange. The individual access really seeks to measure access of individuals' access to their electronic health information through certified health IT, and looking at the methods that support it. And then for standards adoption and conformance, we have a measure area that relates to the apps that connect to certified health IT, looking at the use of FHIR is both like in terms of requests for individual patient level data as well as bulk data. And then we have two measures that relate to public health information exchange, one that relates to the sending of immunization administration data, and the other that relates to the querying of immunization history and forecasts through certified health IT. Next slide, please. So in terms of the HTI proposals, next slide. In terms of the process for reporting, in HTI 1, we had finalized that certified health IT developers who are participating in the program would report on the percentage of total customers as represented by hospitals for products used in inpatient settings and clinician users for products used in outpatient settings. And they would submit that for each metric for which they're submitting a response. And the reason or the rationale for us requesting this information was that this provides transparency regarding the degree to which the data underlying the metrics, how complete it is, you know, to what extent does it reflect the full breadth of data versus is it, you know, partially reflective of it? And this is because developers indicated to us that, you know, they would need the permission of their clients to report on the metrics data. And so we understood that, you know, they might not be in a position to report on all the data that, you know, of their clients, but maybe reporting on a proportion of that. So we just wanted to know what proportion that was. So in HTI 2, we are proposing that we would require developers or certified health IT to provide healthcare provider identifiers for providers that are included in the data that's submitted. And that additional provider identifier information would allow us to link to other publicly available data, like NPES and other sources, and would help us determine the representativeness of the data. So for example, to what extent are the providers that are included in the data from largely from smaller systems versus, larger systems versus smaller systems? Does it reflect primarily physicians, or does it also include other kinds of clinicians? So it just tells us something about the representativeness of the data, in addition to us having information on the completeness of the data. And so that's our kind of main proposal. We're also open to considering other alternatives that provide both transparency and representativeness, transparency on the completeness and representativeness of the data. You know, we could remove the requirement for developers to report the percentage if, you know, instead we only require the developers to provide the healthcare provider identifiers. You know, that's a potential option. And then also, we're requesting comments for alternative options that, you know, might be more patient-centered forms of reporting on the completeness and the representativeness of the data rather than on providers. Next slide, please. And then in terms of process for reporting, we have a number of different clarifications that we've outlined to the process of reporting. I'm not going to go through each one of these, but just to you know, these are relatively minor changes, but a couple things to highlight. We just added we're proposing that developers assess whether they meet the insights requirements as of January 1st of the data collection period, which is about 18 months ahead of when they would actually be required to report. So that way they have, you know, we have like a date set in stone. I think it'll just make it more clear for developers as to, you know, whether they need to report or not 18 months later. And that's similar to the real world testing program requirements. And it, so it makes things consistent with it. Another thing to highlight here is that, you know, another minor update is that, you know, we're suggesting that the documentation related to the methods that developers are using should be to report on the metrics should be available via a publicly accessible hyperlink, as opposed to submitting the data directly to ONC and then ONC kind of posting it. This is just a process that is consistent with other certification criteria. Next slide, please. In terms of other, again, you know, and other updates related to the process of reporting, in HTI 1, we finalized that developers must have at least 50 hospital sites or 50 or 500 individual clinician users across the developer certified health IT to report on the insights measures. And that was to ensure that startup and small developers were not disadvantaged by this program. We are just proposing to revise the wording on this to remove the term sites because that was apparently confusing to some developers. Kind of the more important update here is that we're also wanting to provide clarification on how we're defining hospitals and clinician users. This again was a question that was raised by developers. And so we are just providing some definitions here to clarify and also requesting, you know, comments on those definitions. Next slide, please. All right. So this is sort of the more of the meat, I would say, of, you know, the updates that we're making, that we're proposing, I should say, in HTI 2. For the individual access to electronic health information through certified health IT measure, we're proposing two updates. One, to expand measuring access to not only include, you know, measuring whether an individual accesses their electronic health information, but also whether an authorized representative accesses the information as well. Sounds good, Sarah. I saw your note. So I'll move quickly. You know, that's to kind of address that. On the immunization administration and immunization history side, what we're planning to do, propose, is separately count the number of immunizations electronically submitted to IISs that return with an acknowledgement with an error severity level E code, and then report that by IIS and age category. And then also have separate reporting on where acknowledgements come back from the IIS that separately count the number of immunizations administered that were electronically submitted to the IIS where an acknowledgement was not obtained, was not received by certified health IT. So basically it's like a communication failure. So just documenting that and reporting on the number of those. And that's similar between those two measures. Next slide. And then on the CCDA's side of things, we're just updating the measure to align with the updates that were made in B2. And there are a number of updates associated with that, that including that relate to the new types of data that were specified in B2 and support for automatic reconciliation. And we're also revising one of the metrics as noted there. So I'll stop there. I know I've not taken too much time away from you all for questions. And I'll stop there.
Thanks, Vaishali. This is Sarah. If we could go back to the previous slide, Asel, I just want to quickly touch on this proposal. In the HTI-1 final rule, we finalized the adoption of the decision support intervention certification criterion, and we also finalized a supportive maintenance of certification requirement as part of the assurances condition for this certification criterion. And now we propose to add a conforming update to the attestation condition of certification. That's to help address the assurance maintenance of certification requirements that we finalized in our previous rule. And we believe that this will support and enhance transparency and accountability, and then also help with developer compliance. All right, next slide, thank you. All right, back to Mark.
So I think we just gave ourselves 5 minutes. Is that a question, Vaishali, or that's just a clarification?
Oh, I think Hans asked me a question. I'm just responding to Hans's question.
And that the answer is clear. At least it is. Okay.
Any other questions from task force members? Okay.
This is Dave Eichner. Thank you for the presentation. I do think we've got some issues. It may not be quite at the HTI-2 level about some of the way the insight measures work with immunization registries and the error rate components. For example, in Texas, the IIS currently produces an error when a consent is not on file, but that's not really an error in transmission, nor is it an error in program. Actually, it's a notification to the healthcare provider that the consent has not been filed. Patients are perfectly within their right to not submit a consent and choose not to participate in the registry. Those kinds of errors are going to create problems as you look at the completeness and accuracy. I think another thing that we need to address is looking at the anonymity of data reporting so that immunization or data is not traceable back to individual practices or individual facilities, because that could give competitors insights into their business activities, looking at, for example, the number of immunizations they might administer. So that's something we need to be cognizant of about, you know, other uses for that data. I'm not sure we may want to put some of those in our comments and in feedback. Happy to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve, one thing I want to address, I think it's important maybe for me to communicate, is these measures are at the developer level, at the product level, sorry. So there's no issue with PII or, you know, this is not reporting at an individual practice client level reporting. It's at the product level. So to the second point that you were raising, I just wanted to make that clear that the insights program is at the reporting these measures at the product level.
Okay. You said one of the components of HTI-2 was including a facility ID. So how is that used? How is that then treated in aggregation?
Yeah, I mean give me 1 second. All right. Sorry about the dog. So the list of providers is not linked to their responses on anything they've reported. So for example, let's say that the Immunizations Administration's measure, you know, we would get a count of the number of immunizations that were administered and then sent over to an IIS at the product level for a given product. And then there would be a list of providers associated whose data was included in that metric, but we don't know like how any individual provider, their individual count. It's just a list associated with that.
List of entities that contributed data, but without any attribution.
Yes. Their specific data. It's rolled up at the product level.
Great. Thank you for the clarification. That helps.
Yep. I forget the first comment you had was about the Texas thing. The Texas patient consent piece. And you can put that in a comment. Obviously there's going to be state level variation in how, all this is implemented, and the reporting is by state, by IIS. So different, each IIS will be able to track it by IIS. And, there's going to be a variation by IIS in terms of how things are implemented across the country.
What I indicate is specific to Texas, but I'm sure there are other jurisdictions that will have problems. But again, from a data perspective, it's going to report out as an error, but it's not an error at all. It's not an error in transmission. So the data may have very limited utility because you're not really seeing what you expect to see. It's a perfectly successful transmission of the data or the non-data, as the case may be. So it will impact your utility. And I think you need to be able to accommodate those components and figure out a way of managing those errors.
I appreciate your comment, Stephen. And I know you and I are talking again later this week separately, but yes. I think about this. So we can get into kind of more nitty-gritty detail on it. But I think the error messages, I think those are things that or at HL7 level and are not, that's not something anyway that, we're trying to leverage data. We're trying to leverage information to provide greater insights and transparency. And yes, there may be, and I'm talking at a high level, not specific to this comment, but, we know that these measures are, there's going to be nuances, right, to all of this. And and I think it's important for us to be aware of the issues surrounding the data. But I guess the question is, do you not measure at all then? So I think there's a balancing act there, in terms of just, being aware of all the nuances when interpreting the results versus not reporting on it at all.
I think we'll do one more comment. Mary Beth, I see you have your hand up, and then we'll need to move to the spreadsheet.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mark. And thanks, Vashili, for a really great presentation. And I just want to mention that on behalf of IIS, I think we're really supportive of these measures going forward, but we do appreciate what Steve is bringing up around some of the nuances for a state like Texas that has legislated direction around how to handle opt-outs. And so I think we do plan on commenting on some thoughts about how to potentially address that issue, either with introducing a Measure 1A or looking at exempting some of the opt-outs from Measures 2, 3, and 4. But I know we can get into that in more detail offline or later on in the call. But I do want to say, I think overall, We don't want perfect to be the enemy of the good with these measures, because we think they will give some really great insight on how much reporting and how much querying is flowing back and forth between IS and EHR partners.
Thank you. So I'm looking at the spreadsheet, if we can pull that up, Sarah.
Yeah, just one second. Sorry, I'm having a bit of an issue. Just give me one second.
No worries. And one question too, I see, I think today's topics are rows 42 and 43.
Yes. Can y'all see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, let me get down to 42 and 43. Okay.
But I was gonna ask, I think maybe it was 100% was accidentally, but in column E, if we need to, we may just have to re-add the proposed rule language for the rows below 44 through 47. They may have been written over, but we can do that later. Okay, so for 42, it looks like Mary Beth, you had entered in some recommendations. Do you want to try to synthesize those for the work group? That way we can see what we can move over to column J, and I'll just take notes.
Sure, absolutely. So starting with the first comment, I know that the measures suggest reporting overall and then in year two, stratifying by IIS, but we have some concerns that that's going to really skew the numbers from some of our larger folks who participate in larger jurisdictions. And so we wanted to explore the possibility of moving straight to stratifying by IIS in year one. And we don't think that would put that much additional burden on EHR partners to report on their products, but would love to know if folks are open to that, because we feel like the data would be much more valuable if we just jump directly into stratification by IIS in year one.
And just to make sure we're on the same page, what is IIS?
Sorry about that. Immunization Information System. And I'll just mention too that there is another conversation going on in group one about sort of terminology. And I think Immunization Registry and Immunization Information System are used interchangeably throughout HDI2. And so we're recommending consolidating around one of those terms, and the preferred term in public health would be Immunization Information System, as it's more representative of the broader functionality of these systems rather than Immunization Registry, which is considered, I guess, an older term. So we would opt to lean into Immunization Information System, or IIS for short, as the preferred term over immunization registries.
So having that as a recommendation, does anyone have any alternate views, or are folks okay putting that in? I'll take that as a yes. Are there any other recommendations you want to include for row 42?
Yeah, so we also looked at, and this I think ties in with the topic of what, overlapping, I guess, with the topic that Ike brought up earlier. Some of the optional measures, and particularly the optional measure, number of submissions that did not receive acknowledgement, overlap with measure four for year one or measure eight for year two. So we were wondering if there was any need to differentiate with those, if they're actually measuring something different, or if not, if it makes sense to drop that measure from the optional list.
Let me just copy that. And then do you want to just, it looks like you have a third point here too about patients being able to opt out.
Yeah, and this is directly the issue that Ike was bringing up, that we believe patients who opt out should be excluded from measure three and possibly measure two and four as well, so that a jurisdiction like Texas that has a lot of those opt-outs wouldn't necessarily look like they were sending messages in error, that they would just not be included overall. So, and I don't know if that's the perfect solution, or another alternative that we had talked about internally was the possibility of adding a measure 1A or a metric 1A that would include immunizations that were administered and were attempted to be submitted to the IIS, meaning it wouldn't include the opt-outs. But I think that may take more offline discussion, and would love to hear from Ike and Vasily and others about if that would resolve the concerns that a state like Texas has around opt-out patients.
Thanks for that, Mary Beth. I think just for clarity, when we're talking about opt-out or opting in, we're talking about opting into the registry, not opting into or opting out of data sharing or participating in insights, just for clarity's sake.
Right. Yes, thanks, Ike.
I think the challenge here is that at least in Texas, the quote unquote error message is being generated when a record is not included into the registry because consent has not been submitted. So we don't collect data about patients who are opting out of participation. So that I'm not quite sure how you would identify them as being part of a denominator or part of exclusion. There may be some portion of folks that, you know, had intended to participate but didn't have a consent on file or previously submitted consent, but we don't have a way of tracing that out. And in either way, that's not a technical performance measure at all in terms of looking at the ability for successful or not successful transmission. That may be a programmatic issue, but not a technology issue. So I think the focus of the insight measures really needs to be on the technical performance, not looking at the programmatic performance of IIS and the like. So looking at, you know, a rule about meeting the validation criterion really should be looking at, you know, validation criterion of that registry. But also looking at it on the IIS side about what modifications are necessary on the IIS side to report sufficient data back to the healthcare provider for exclusion into the measures in the first place. I'm not sure how many registries have implemented standardized reporting of errors across or using standardized code sets to report errors consistently between IISs back to the vendor. You would have much better insight in that than I would.
Yeah, and we have seen great improvement across the IIS community for standardizing those acknowledgement messages. And that's been a huge area of our measurement efforts in collaboration with CDC to really line up around the standards around acknowledgement messages. So I think this, on the IIS side, I think that is definitely improving.
Hung? We can't hear you, Hung.
Sorry, I was triple muted. But this is related to what I put in the spreadsheet. Is there value in collecting end-user feedback on the health information technology as well, so that, you know, what you're measuring is what the functionality is and what the measurements of the functionality are, but are they actually useful to the end user, or are there barriers to being able to utilize them in the manner for which they're intended? And so my proposal in the spreadsheet is that end user feedback is incorporated as a measurement as well, so that not only are you just measuring, can you transfer information from point A to point B, but does the information actually come across in a meaningful way that you can utilize, and does it inflict frustration on either the person generating the data or the person trying to make use of it at the other end? I think that is an important measurement, because you can measure all you want on the ability of a system to perform what you ask of it on paper, but if it's not useful to the human trying to interact with it or trying to make use of the information derived from it, then I think that's a failing.
And Hung, just to confirm, this is what you put in row 48?
I put it into the field that was specially allocated for
global comments, I think.
Yeah.
So I can move that over as a work group recommendation. Are folks okay incorporating that? Because I feel like that's going to touch on lots of these. So that was 42. Stephen, I did try to add a line at the very end on top of Mary Beth's comments about focusing the insight measures on technical performance, not, I don't know if I captured what you said correctly, pragmatic performance, or what was the alternate?
Programmatic performance.
Programmatic. Yep, got it. Okay. And then let's go to row 42 and 43. I know that we're over time. For this one, there was no member recommendations. Anything people would want to include as a work group? And if not, then we can start going through our backlog. Okay,
Mark, this is Sarah. I'm going to go up to the top. I think Mary Beth added some recommendations in column J, so I'm going to pull that up for everyone. And
cool. So row 3. Yeah.
And I can just quickly touch on that. This was a conversation that we had early in the work group about supporting the adoption of US EDI version 4, but also using it as an opportunity to call out that there are some previous comments that have been made about US EDI and elements that ideally we would want included in future versions of US EDI. So, and I know this is a little bit out of scope with what we're commenting on, which is overall we support the move to US EDI version 4, but it seems important to go on record that there are some outstanding recommendations that have been made that are in on record for comments that would be good to include for future versions.
Something I don't see here, but I know that we've faced internally as a struggle with US EDI, is medication administrations. Are folks okay if I just put that in this list? I think otherwise this comment looks good to me.
Mark, this is Sarah. Can we mark this text as green?
or
is it final?
I mean, do you mean just like make it green or do something different?
We make it green like that. Just cool. So we know that this group has discussed it, and then we can take it to the full task. Thanks.
Let's go to row 4. Mary Beth and Hans, it sounds like the two of you kind of agree to language here.
Yeah, and I'll speak to this, and then Hans, please jump in if you have more to add. So this topic also came up on Group One's work. And so this was language that we crafted. So I don't know if it needs to appear in both places or in the final transmittal consolidated comments. Just it'll be represented once, obviously. But this was language we came up with around the smart health card and smart health links, and really proposing it be an optional measure, given that those are still in the midst of going through the balloting process, but that we support their use for consumer access to immunizations.
And maybe to add, this has been a little bit confusing because we were chasing down these standards. Latest update as of this morning, Mary Beth, is that there are 3 references in the rule to something health cards. There is smart health cards, colon, vaccination and testing, and HL7 fire, smart health cards and testing. The first one is being confused in ours, as in my head, other folks, EHRA otherwise, are equated that somewhat more with the health cards and links, because there's a HL7 fire, smart health cards and links, IG, that incorporates the smart health card. So there's a bit of a confusion going on. The smart one, not the HL7 one of that, is published. So that actually is a correct reference. However, the smart health cards, vaccination and testing, that term is used in the preamble, but in the actual rule language, it uses HL7 fire smart health cards and testing. That latter one exists, but is not published. So that's still a challenge for vaccinations for F1. And I cannot find anywhere the smart health cards vaccination testing as referenced in the preamble. But in that terminology, it's not used in the actual rules language. So there's a bit of a confusion around that. Sounds like that health cards, the framework could start to be used because it's published, but the vaccination specific capabilities are still seemingly in a document that has been balloted a number of years ago, but has not been published. So that's the confusion as to, yeah, we would like to go there, but there's some guidance that is being referenced that looks like it doesn't exist. If it is published before the final rule, that's a reasonable thing to do, still as optional, as Mary Beth indicated. But if it's not published for vaccination specifically, then we have a little bit of a problem, because then we have no guidance to point back to. So that's still the chasing down. And if somebody from ONC knows more about that, it would be great. But there's something out of sync. And that was Mary Beth as of this morning that we found out that little twist.
Thank you, Hans.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. So I'm guessing then we should hold on this language till we track down where the actual balloted piece is.
Yes, and I'm just typing some things on that. But if somebody from ONC, ASTB ONC, has insight to make sure that the smart health cards vaccination and testing language in the preamble is indeed linked to the HL7 fire smart health cards and testing in the actual draft final language, if there's any clarification that can be shared, would be great, while also noting that the last one, HL7 version, is not published.
Hi, Hans, this is Sarah. I don't think we have anybody from OTEC, from OSCA, on today to speak to that, but I will take it back to them.
Thank you. And then we can fine-tune according one way or the other.
Sounds good.
So if everyone's okay with it, I will make this text green, which I do see has the language about the unpublished guides. Okay. Do we want to go to 5 next, Hans, was there anything you wanted to include here?
Five, I think that, I think that Charles was there. But if you want me to talk through it, if there is any additional discussion on row five, I thought it was all there, or that we actually, I might have moved some of it to row 10, because that's where it really was J2 about dynamic registration. So versus the comment on five, row
we
five.
Have something in row column G about giving the example of Helios. Oh.
Sorry, I'm in a different wrong row here. Unless there needs to be further discussion, I think the comment could be that the publication of the trust community details with endpoints, we are looking now on the same. Yes, if that's acceptable to be a comment, we can almost just copy it verbatim in there.
Perfect. So I'll move that to J.
If that makes sense to others. In other words, as part of UDAP IG, which is used in dynamic registration, that is there, that if that's in, then at that point in time, this will be there because that's where it's defined. So it's duplicative.
I'll copy both of these over to column J. Can you scroll to the right, Sarah?
Yeah, and that's why I was looking at 10. In context of the comment in 10 about dynamic registration, if dynamic registration would not be there, then UDAP would not be there, and therefore it would stand on its own. But I think that dynamic registration is suggested to be supported. So that's why we can remove the duplication.
Okay, wait, just to make sure I understand. So what do we want to do in, I just finalized six, what was it? Six and four and five? Or no, it was five and six. We'll finalize, and then you wanted to go to 10?
The only reason would be is that five relates to 10, because that is what it's based on.
And in 10, we have the language in column G. Would you want to that?
That was originally up in row seven, but given the comments that Cheryl was making there, more general, and there is a J2 that is specific to dynamic registration, I just moved it into the row that it's best in the context of J2. And then Cheryl's comment in the context overall would fit better there. So that's what I actually was suggesting by moving it down here.
Got it.
And if that makes sense, then if that carries over into J, then row five stays intact because that then works together.
Okay. Any other comments about, so let me copy this over in row 10 as well. Any other comments about 5, 6, and 10? This is all in column J. Okay, so I will finalize those three. Let's go. Let's do seven. Looks like there's a lot going on here. So Hans, Cheryl, and potentially Rajesh. Let's start with Hans and Cheryl. If you've looked over each other's comments, are they compatible together? And Hans, it looks like there's duplication of your comments here and what we put in row 10. Is Cheryl here? Doesn't look like it. So Hans, should we just remove your section from the workgroup recommendation in row 7?
Yes, because it seems to be better fitting with J2 on that individual row, and leave the comment on 7 more the general one that that Cheryl raised.
Okay. So I know that Cheryl's not here, but any modifications we'd want to make to the language proposed by Cheryl?
Cheryl and I talked about it, and we are okay and in sync.
Okay.
So I don't have any further comments.
So that's for 7. So 8 through 22 or 23. We are including the language in 10. Do we want to add anything for any of these other rows?
If you look at row, where is it? 8 and 9, I put in 2 comments. 1, I think, is just a clarification. But the first one, generally, we don't need to make supportive comments. But in this case, because of the statement in combination with role-based criteria, where we do make other comments around it to make a more specific criteria, based on payer, provider, laboratory, public health, et cetera, that this might be helpful to have as a general statement that modular in combination with role-based is very helpful. So it is supportive of, but that we emphasized and that we'd like to see more of that wherever possible.
Got it. So this is row 8.
Yes.
I know that we've made that type of comment and recommendation elsewhere. So anyone have any additional changes they'd want to make to that? No. Hans, I had not seen, I'd skimmed over row column G, so I'll move these others over.
Oh, you don't need to move over 8 and 9. That was just a general comment for awareness to double check. Since we have that, we have the comments on dynamic registration. I don't think we need anything on 1.
So how about 12?
Request for clarification. I'm not sure whether others agree with that, but it's asking for more clarification.
Yeah.
And making it a little bit easier on the user clinician in this regard.
Any other feedback for row 12? No, we'll move that over. Let's go to, it looks like 15. Hans, do you want to move that recommendation over from column G to?
If nobody objects, that there is clarity that we don't need to go too granular because that would get too much. So there's not an expectation that we're going to be, let's say, vital signs versus laboratory, makes sense. But if there is the intent to go further down to only vital signs on this day or something like that, that would not necessarily be helpful. It would make it more complicated to have too many choices. Mm-hmm. Complicated from a user and usability perspective.
Does that sound good with others? Okay, so we'll move that over. Next one is 17. Anyone have any alterations to Hans's proposed text?
Assuming I spelled it correctly. The last word, context, is misspelled.
Oh, fix that. Okay. Eighteen and 19 have the same recommendation. Any adaptations folks would want to make?
It might be sufficient that the comments in G34 on both 20 and 21 can be done in G34 because they reference J20, 22, 21. So it would not necessarily be needed here as long as we have something in G34.
Oh, you're saying in 18 and 19?
Yes, in 18, 19 is that G20 and 21 are being referenced by 34 in particular. So making the comment in the main criteria would be enough, but just want to highlight that we want to stay in sync with that. We need to have it there or we need to do it here.
And where's, sorry, I'm trying to orient myself in the spreadsheet. Where is G34?
Should be further down in row 29, where it is.
29. So let's just make sure, does the recommendation in column J, it sounds like this, if we finalize, will address?
Effectively, it does, because then the particular hooks that are being addressed are then flexible as well. So as an example, in G34, there's a reference to a number of different hooks, like appointment hook, order hook, related to a number of them. I think it's 6 or 7. And if there's flexibility on the guide, that would then also allow somebody to say, the main benefit that I can achieve with prior auth is in the appointment space. So support appointment books. Yeah, somebody else might say, well, I don't have that capability, but I'm focusing on orders. Do that. Do not require the use of appointment books. Currently, the language in G34 requires support seemingly for all. If mm-hmm. there's flexibility, you can focus on the ones that have the most impact and then grow from there. So that's why if this one holds, then it would cover what otherwise would need to be stated in J20 and J21. So I'm okay if it's here and not elsewhere.
Okay. How about let's go back up to row 20. I'll move your comment over, Hans. Any changes folks would want to make to the recommendation? If not, I will finalize.
And this also relates to the other comment that that we talked about earlier with Mary Beth.
Row 21, looks like this is the last one in this batch. Any feedback? And Hans, your comments in G and I in row 21, are those now reflected in J? Or do we need to make any changes? Yeah. I'll keep that. Row 20.
I'm okay with the way that you covered it. I think we talked about that in a couple of places to focus on subscription topics.
Perfect. Okay. Row 24, or sorry, 22. I don't see anything, so we'll move on. Does anyone have anything they'd want to add in row 22? No. Okay. So let's go to in row 24, there's some notes from our discussion, but we don't have a recommendation yet. Anything people want to put in the workgroup recommendation for row 24? Or I guess, Sarah, maybe that's not needed because then we break it out into all the pieces below.
Yeah, that's right. This was sort of just an overview row, but the specific proposals are broken out in 25 through 31.
Okay, so I'll just delete those. Given that so much of the recommendations between 25 and 30 are similar, can we just finalize those together? So column J, 25 through 30, does anyone have any changes they'd want to propose making? If not, then we will turn those green. 31, similar as well. Any comments? Otherwise, we'll turn it green. We got 8 minutes. Please try to get through the ones that have recommendations. So 33, Hans and Ike, did y'all write this, or just to confirm? Okay. Any comments on this recommendation? Are folks okay to finalize?
Other than wordsmithing to make it flow with the rest.
Would you like to wordsmith?
By when do we need that?
Sarah, Seth.
Hans, I can pick up the lead for the DICOM element and send you some text.
Okay. For me, I think... starting with recommend that ASTP ONC address or clarify or something. So it's mostly just the start of the sentences.
We'll get the language cleaned up and put it in the next little bit. Like next couple hours.
Yeah, Mark, I can just speak to the overall timeline as we'll be sending out the draft recommendations in this Google Doc to the members of HITECH that are not participating on the task force, just so they have an opportunity to provide any questions or concerns in preparation for the full task force meetings next week.
Row 34, any changes?
Again, we'll polish the language in the next hour.
And was there something Cheryl wanted to add? Or did we want to copy down something from above?
Cheryl, can you provide a little extra guidance?
I don't think she's here.
Can we scroll up to row 7 real fast?
If something is already up here, this is, I guess, more of a question for ASTP. Do we need to copy it to somewhere else in the same document, or would it be passed along regardless?
Well, it should be passed along, but I was thinking if there was something that was relevant in the context of the item below that, you know, used the same base idea and reflected. So I think that's where she was going. Calling attention to the applicability of the recommendation to the item, the DICOM, as well as dynamic charts.
So I'll just slightly change the language to say align with the recommendation in row 7, or maybe I need to cite the specific.
Oh, in corporate language from. And again, I'll put some text together in the next hour and a half.
Hans, I'll move the language over from 35 from G to J. Time's up. There are what we set a timer for?
There are no timers set.
We're setting a timer for 5 minutes. Public comment starts at 12:20.
Yes. Okay. But I mean, the one that just went off, was that a transition to something?
It's for this section. So if y'all need to finish discussing, that's fine.
Yeah. For 36, is there anything we need to update in this or just confirm the final around server side?
The question is that it might be health IT storage might be better. So I there are different terms floating around: database, server side, storage arrays, other terms. So that might be better, or to clarify that it's for data at rest. But there is the server side versus the device. So I still like that one as long as it's encompassed whatever infrastructure that is, which could be a combination of database servers, SANs, storage arrays, et cetera. Somewhere in that environment is where you're going to encrypt.
Okay.
So I'm not, each of the terms is going to create its own ambiguity.
So folks okay with 36? We'll keep that. Hans, I'm guessing if it's support, can I just remove for row 37?
For 7, sorry, I need to jump down to that.
Or 37, or I can just keep.
Yeah, so that can be just general.
So row 38, there's a, Hans, you wrote something on, in column G about the EPA electronic prior auth.
Yeah, and this is the EPA for prescriptions. So it's not the 34 for 35. That's here it's using NCPDP. The suggestion is to ensure that there is alignment of adoption. There have been some references to rules in which there is the capability stated for payers to support that. The understanding that I have, and others would be helpful if others have further better information, is that the actual implementations of those are not necessarily there to say if we build it on the provider side, we have something to connect to. So I think this is a general statement to ask that requirements and target dates are aligned. So it's not one party that's ready and the other one is not.
So you want to add something, recommend aligning target dates?
Yeah, and availability on both sides, particularly payers and providers. I believe from our discussion that pharmacies can play a role in that as well. Or might have a role in that as well in that in the prior auth space. So that's why we listed payer pharmacy from a provider perspective.
So does the language in 38 now look good?
I'm okay with that. Maybe at the end could say, and possibly pharmacy. Depends on the role.
Yep.
I think there is, but some might argue not as much or different.
So we'll take a brief pause to do public comments, and then assuming we may have a few minutes, we'll wrap up finalizing. So I'll go back to Seth.
All right, thank you, Mark. So we're going to transition into our public comment portion of the agenda. If you are on the Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're participating by phone only today, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, you can press *6 to mute and unmute your lines. And just as a reminder, as we give folks a few seconds to queue up with any public comments that they have, next week, as Mark mentioned, this is our last individual group meeting for group two. And we have a series of full task force meetings starting on Tuesday of next week, and then continuing on Wednesday and Thursday. Those meetings are going to be from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. And the purpose of those will be to wrap up the recommendations and get ready for the co-chairs to present the final work of this task force at the September 12th HITECH meeting. So I am not seeing any hands raised on the Zoom at this time. And then just checking if we have any on the line, and we do not. So I will turn it, Mark, back to you.
Okay. So let's keep just to wrap this up. We're almost done. So Sarah, if you can pull back up the spreadsheet. So the language in 39 and 40 is similar. Are folks okay finalizing both of these? I'll just say we recommend. Okay, I'll make those green. We talked about 42 already. Are folks okay finalizing this one? I will make that green. And then are folks okay to finalize Hans's global comment in 48? Sarah, if you could scroll down to row 48. Go ahead and make that green. Okay, so we have some that are blank, which I'm going to assume will mean we support the language. Does anyone on the task force have any other recommendations they would like to include?
Mark, just real quickly, these recommend or column D, I believe these are added as global comments and they're not really tied to a proposal. So there's nothing to add in terms of a summary, just so you know. I think that's what Cheryl was adding her comments to. She put them in the proposal summary section, but I don't think they're tied to anything.
Are you saying remove it from column J?
No, what I'm saying is these particular topics in rows 44 through 47, I don't think these are tied to any particular recommendation in the proposed rule. These were global comments, I think, that Cheryl wanted to add.
Got
it. She added her comments in row or column E. So it was just a little confusing. So I wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
And I believe 44 was done in row 7. So I think we covered that. I'm double checking, but that one looks awfully familiar to 7. I believe that's the first part of 7.
Yes, I do remember that. Okay, so how about 45? This also seems similar to Hans, not Hans, But I'll copy that over as well into column J. And then 46, increasing audit capacity. Any comments on making that a work group recommendation? If not, I'll finalize that. And then 47 as well.
On 47, the question is that how much is that the fact that we currently have view, download, and transmit, that already indicates patient-initiated data sharing between providers, but it is the patient transmitting that. So I think if it is where the patient asks the provider to share data to a particular auto provider, then that seems, at least to me, a new criterion, not an existing one. And I'm not sure where to tie it to in HDI2 proposals, that it would be a clear extension of that.
Okay.
I'm wondering, is this really a general future, or can we tie it more clearly to a specific proposal that this then has an opportunity there?
Sarah, can we make a follow-up item for Cheryl to try to address Hans's concern in this?
Yes, we'll do.
And if so, I'll remove this from the work group recommendation. But yeah, it seems like we don't have, and I know that she's not here right now, but so we don't have what we need to finalize that one. Okay. So I think this finalizes all work group recommendations we have at the moment. In the last 2 minutes, is there anything anyone would like to add to the work group recommendations? If not, thank you for the whirlwind at the finish line and for all the work over the last few months.
Thank you for helping us get through that. We appreciate it.
Of course. So meeting is adjourned, and we'll take this to the full task force next week. Seth, did you want to say anything?
Nope, that's it. Thank you all.